counter to Cannonball Adderley's, I guess, Cannonball Adderley's this year. But this is from Woody Shaw, and this is from his 1987 album, Imagination. This is Lead Stories. I'm Retrice Lead, and thank you for joining me once again. I got quite a bit of feedback on email on the program that we've been doing on this triangulation and understanding our current situation, especially with regard to Donald Trump and the craziness going on in Washington, D.C., in the context of power. And again, raising two other aspects of it, and that is race, class, and power. The tripod that has governed this country from the very beginning of European introduction into the United States. And it took off on those three pillars and has remained fixed on these three pillars. How the society as a whole is governed in terms of that triangulation, it's a conundrum now of race, class, and power. I was very grateful and very impressed. Well, I shouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't say I was shocked. I'm very impressed with the analysis that our callers offered. They were right on point. But you see, we have to, when we take a look at major developments like this, we're told what it is. So that's as far as our understanding goes. We're told what this is. We're being told what this is in Washington, D.C. We're being told that this is a fight for power, and Trump's unwillingness to yield. Okay. Yes, that's an aspect of it. But when we see these kinds of developments, it always is important to dig a little deeper. And when you dig a little deeper, you see entirely different aspects to what we are being told is the issue. So it's not just about a president who is out of whack, who is out of control, who is obsessed with power, and is not willing to give it up, even though he lost a duly constituted election. No, that's what we're told. But when you look at this, you see a different aspect of it, which has been the ribbon running through all of our history in this country. And that starts with this quest for power and the calamities that have occurred as a result of this quest for power. Who is trying to keep it? Who's trying to get it? And who is being fought over for it? So we will return to yesterday's discussion, all that to say, and kind of complete it, give people some opportunity to participate in the discussion, because quite a few didn't get a chance to get in on the conversation, and therefore we didn't have a chance to appreciate what they had to say. But while Congress is weighing and deliberating how it is going to sanction Donald Trump, whose connection to all of this insanity is without question. He is the focal point of it. We will still, while we understand that this is what is being told, this is a news angle, this is the news story of the day, and we get our daily dose of it when we tune in, whether television or radio or whatever. There is the story. And the story we are told is, of course, the battle that Trump is waging to hold on to his seat in the White House. But, of course, when you look at it in its larger sense, you begin to understand the issue in totality. It takes on an entirely different meaning because it comes loaded with a history unique, I would say, to the United States. So we'll get that conversation started again today. We'll finish it today. But I wanted to provide an opportunity for people who didn't get a chance to make their contribution to do so today. So we're extending the conversation from yesterday to today. This America's conundrum, excuse me, of race, class, and power. The number to call is 888-874-4888. I would appreciate it if you look at the question from the dimension that we're talking about today. How do these factors play into what we are now dealing with as a nation today? What is the contribution that these factors make in helping us understand more fully what is going on in Washington today? 888-874-4888. Mind you, we do have quite a few people who will be calling in, so be mindful of time. Don't, go off thinking you have unlimited time. No, you don't. You have time. You have certainly got some time to elucidate, to make your point clear. But leave some room for other people as well. 888-874-4888. Well, Congress, in the meantime, we can talk about this. Congress is trying to determine how to get Trump out of office, using what method it should use to remove him from office. And I'm not getting all excited about it. I'm not. And I'm not getting all excited about it because, you see, this had been brewing for a long time. They should have made this move a long time ago. There were more than enough reasons to move against the president, and they did not because they were afraid. That's the end of it. They were afraid. They were afraid to exercise their own power. And instead, we had individuals going on their own individual, using their own office, as it were, as members of Congress, and having power, some degree of power there. That was more important to them, to hold on to that power than to actually serve their purpose and to serve the people. So I'm not excited about any of the things that they're doing today. I remind folks that I think I was at the forefront of criticizing Donald Trump, and people said that I was, some people, not a lot of people, But some people criticized me for criticizing him and saying what a bad choice he was as president of the United States and what we should expect, which is very little of him. The White House was simply, in his view, a means to an end. It gave him even more power to conduct his private affairs, his business affairs, his coterie of sycophants who also had their personal interests to monetize that, his family. It was an industry. He made the White House his own cottage industry. And it was so clear from early on that this man's mind had taken a pretty long leave of absence. But it didn't matter. You see, it's the same trick he pulled in New York City, where people were just mesmerized by Donald Trump. Oh, he is a new kind of leader. He's a new kind of leader, all right. He definitely monetized his office. When he comes around, everybody is all excited. He's a businessman, but he's a politician and a different kind of politician. And people just gave him more and more elastic. And it ended up that they couldn't give him enough. He just took what he wanted and then demanded even more. So I saw early, and I talked about it very early on. I couldn't understand why nobody saw it. I'm talking about it, and I started more than 4 years ago. More than 4 years ago, I've been talking about it, so you can understand why I am not all that enthusiastic. I've been there. I've done that. I've done my work. I exposed it. I talked about it. And now people are talking, well, you know, we should have looked at him a little harder. Or now they're trying to figure out how to use the Constitution and the bit of power that they have to set things straight. And the only way they could do that is to get rid of him. That's your problem. I spotted it a long time ago. So I'm not thrilled about the fact that it took you this long to figure it out. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air. You start us off today.
Hi, how are you today, Eutrice?
Thank you, fine.
Well, you're asking about race and class, right?
Race, class, and power.
And power. Oh, well, let me make a quick point about power, which a lot of people seem to be a little bit naive about in some of the conversations I find myself in, is there seems to be a misunderstanding in regard to power, in that people, in a lot of cases, seem a little bit naive to the fact that power always wants more power. That if you have power, well, now you want more. Just like if you have $1 billion, well, now I want $2 billion. Then I want $20 billion, right? There's no stopping to how much of an invasion into our personal rights, into our our privacy. Like, I fear that now we're entering into a biosecurity type of state, where I've had odd conversations recently where someone suggested to me that forcing people to take a vaccine is the same thing as asking people to wear seatbelts, which I completely disagree with. But on the subject of race, you know, I think it's really important to understand that the human race comes from Africa, apparently. I mean, there hasn't really been any dispute about that since Leakey found, you know, the oldest fossil.
If I might interrupt a bit, the issue of race, as defined in the context of our discussion, has to do with our understanding in the United States
Absolutely. That's what I was going to comment.
Race and how it fits into our daily lives.
Right. Absolutely. But I think I have a personal theory, which is that a man can only be a good human being insofar as he is able to acknowledge women in his
but you,
life.
But you're all over day. The place already. I want you, what I'm trying to do
know,
is
I know,
to get...
but I was going to say, and the same thing goes for, in my opinion, a white person is only as good a person as they are able to acknowledge black people, people of color in general, but first of all, people of African descent. And until we understand that, yes, we all are one human race, we all come from Africa, then we will not be better.
Okay, you're off, and you keep going in that direction. What we looking
I don't
at...
I understand what I'm misunderstanding. I'm sorry.
All right. We have a situation, a national crisis.
Yes.
It's a political crisis. And we're trying to get an understanding of the crisis. It is clear. I mean, people will tell you, you turn into any media outlet and they'll tell you what the issue is. The issue is Donald Trump has finally gotten on everybody's last good nerve in his conduct and his dealings as president of the United States, and they want him out. They believe that the way to do that is to use his alleged propagation of this notion that he will encourage a groundswell of support from people who are right-wing. He would agitate that group and make it appear that they are the ones who are fighting for him. They are the ones in support of him. And he is just being maligned and picked on and falsely accused of essentially initiating his own personal coup. He has gone this far in order to hold on to power. Now, that's the story line. Of course, you know about the riots and the attacks that occurred in Washington, D.C. But what we wanted to take another look at another angle to that, and that is that, in a way, there's precedence for this. And the precedence for these political uproars would come in the historic context that we know, which is the play between race, class, and power. I'm trying to get from you, how do you see that playing out within the context of race, class, and power in Washington, D.C. now?
I mean, I think the political landscape is completely askew. I think you have Nazis who are really like hillbillies who have been strangely animated by some sort of ideology. And then you have real Nazis who are in the government with strangely ideological powers and or ideological beliefs and political power to go along with it. So, I think that there's also a lot of strange bedfellows at this point, and the political landscape is very askew. I'm curious myself as to realistically what percentage of those activists, if you want to call them that, terrorists, other people would say, on January 6th, I wonder what percentage of them were ideological Nazis, for example. I don't know. But, you know, and at the end of the day, it's always... I don't want to say it's always motivated by profit, because I think profit and power play hand in hand. And sometimes it's more about the power than about the profit. But using shock doctrine principles. And I think this is a
well, you got to start it today. Let us see how the conversation goes. Thank you so much. Edgewater is in the house. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Trees.
Hello.
How are you, dear?
Okay, thank you. What do you think, how do you construct your understanding of what is happening now? Is it literal? Is it only what we see and hear and read in the way of information? Or do you subscribe to the idea that there's historical context for this, that we've been here, except that we insist on not knowing it?
Yeah. What you mean, we're repeating things in history? I don't know.
This effort, this fight that is going on now, basically harkens back. If we think about it, really think about it, we can see that it is not new. It is not a new fight. It is new in the sense only that, you know, you have a rather interesting central figure, Donald Trump, and you have a lot of activities around him having to do with what presumably is political in nature, but it isn't. It isn't just that.
Well, you know, I have a problem with the whole situation because it's not making any kind of sense. And when stuff doesn't make sense, then I question it. And there's something else going on that we're not being told and we're not seeing. Now, when Trump is allowed to invite people that support him to Washington for a peaceful protest, is what he called it. But usually in the 4 years that he was president, he had a rally like almost every month. And these people would always come to a place, an arena, a stadium, a place where they have set up stands and stuff. And they could screen the people coming in because he doesn't want hecklers and stuff. But once in a while they get in. And then he tells them, get rid of them. I want to punch that guy in the nose. You know, you remember all that, right?
I'm listening.
Well, then this time he's just inviting people to come to Washington for a protest. That's an open invitation for all the lunatic fringe groups that are out there. People that consider themselves patriots and carry flags all around with them, flags everywhere. People that consider themselves anarchists that just want to start trouble because they hate the government. They want to bring it down any way they can. These people aren't Trump supporters. They're just against the government, whoever's in there, Trump. So they're against Trump, but they have the opportunity to mix in with his people and make it look like a giant crowd, bigger than the people that really supporting him. I'm sure a lot of the people that were there came to support Trump because it was his final rally while he's president, because it's over. So they all came out, but also these other fringe groups came out and mingled in. And on top of that, you have agent provocateurs. Maybe that's why there was less police than it was expected to be there, because some of them were making like they were protesters. And they were probably the ones in the front line jostling with the police. So whatever, they allowed them to go into the Capitol. That's the number one big mistake. But they want this. So this is all telling me that this is a planned out thing. Trump and the Democrats and the Republicans, they're all in on it, and we're being played and manipulated. This
I'm
is
not
the way
interested,
I'm seeing it.
I'm less interested in the dynamics of January 6th. Not very much interested in that. I'm interested in the event and the fallout from the event in the context of what we know this country is about, what it was founded on. And in that case, it was right in line. It was perfectly aligned with the historical issues that we've been confronting in this country for centuries. And that is the interplay, or the lack thereof in some instances, between race, class, and power. I'm not concerned. I'm not I'm not expecting to learn anything new about the nature of that protest in Washington. I'm not expecting that we would learn very much. But I am trying to discuss and to get people to discover that it is not new. And it is perhaps very dramatic. It's certainly being touted as being very, very newsworthy, unusual, but it is not. If you study American history, you see he's perfectly aligned with American history. This is not new. There's nothing that happened there that is really brand new. Nothing. Thanks a lot for calling in. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Therese. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
I agree. I disagree with E as far as who the people were at attendance. And I agree with you strongly about that this is nothing new. What we saw happen last week was just a tiny, tiny little fraction of what occurred during the Civil War. In the Civil War, we had the all-out breakage of what we saw last week, including holding people accountable. Okay, they did not hold anyone accountable for the Civil War. And it's the same way what we're going to see. Trump is not going to be held accountable for what he did last week. Why? Because this is their little business. If it was, I'm going to say if it was a black president that did what Donald Trump did, we will see a totally different story. It will be a totally different story. He has the right to create the disruption that he did last week. He has that right. He has the right to lie and say he won the election. Okay? Only he has that right because he's born with that right according to his constitution, because those laws were created for them. And that's just the way it is. We have to fight for our rights. They're born with their right to act out and do whatever they feel like doing and get away with it. It's in their mindset. And I'm sorry if I'm coming out as if I'm sounding racist or whatever, but I saw a video the other day. There was a teacher, I can't remember her name, but she was a teacher, and she made white children in her class follow the rules of being oppressed. And you should have seen that these kids, they were literally crying when they couldn't speak their minds and they had to follow the rules and be oppressed. You should have saw it. I mean, it was a great example as to how certain people in our society are allowed to speak their minds, do whatever they feel like doing, and not be held accountable for it.
When you say this is a story, I would agree with you because I just said it myself. This is long and deep in our history.
Yeah. It's white supremacy.
Where people have, it seems, unlimited power to do whatever they want to do to get their way,
no,
to trample on other people's rights, to do whatever they want, break the law. Here is a president basically inciting insurrection of his own government.
And that's okay.
And they still
trying to
figure out, people still talking as if, oh my God, we have to take a closer look at this to find out if that was really what it was. Suddenly they can't tell. Here is a president calling people essentially to arms.
Yeah.
I didn't get what I want. Right. I didn't get what I want. And I want you to come out and fight for me. And they did. And people in Congress, supposedly intelligent people, are still trying to figure out, well, how are they going to broach this question when they know this has been part of the American landscape, political landscape, for a long time? What is this idea now that suddenly this is something new? I don't get it. Maybe I'm missing something.
See, Utrice, you see it. Listen, you see it with this coronavirus. Okay, you have a virus out there. Forget about the, for everybody, whoever's listening to me, and you believe in all this, you know, you have your opinions. Put all that garbage aside, okay? Let's just say there's a virus out there, which, you know, people are dying from this virus, and it's extremely contagious, and they tell you all you have to do is put a stupid little piece of cloth over your mouth so that when you speak, the saliva that squirts out from under your tongue doesn't accidentally land on somebody's eyeball and you infect them. As if nobody ever out there that has ever experienced that, where you have people that speak and you see the saliva just comes straight out of their mouth. People, when there's some people out there that when they speak, they slobber like a rabid dog. Okay, so then you have people that cough, don't have manners. I mean, especially in this day of age, and don't cover their mouth. Okay, so you cough in somebody's face and you kill them. The other day it was a surgeon died, a plastic surgeon died because one of his patients didn't update the doctors as to they were COVID positive, or I believe they didn't take the test or something like that, and so when they coughed during the operation and the guy dies. Okay, now putting a piece of cloth over your mouth, they can't stand that. Why? Because they're told to. Okay? Why? Oh, God forbid you're told to do something. Where does that mentality come from, Utrice? I've been told to do this and act this way, and you're in this place, and you belong here, and you belong there, and not in my neighborhood. And I've been told that all my life. Putting a piece of cloth on my face is a piece of cake compared to all the that I've had to endure in my life.
Language.
I'm sorry about that, Yuri. But I'm very passionate about this because it's a mentality. It's a mindset. Okay? It's a mindset that if you're told, oh, my God, you got to put a piece of cloth over your mouth? Well, that's against my rights. You can't tell me what to do. And it's the same thing. He has the right to do whatever the hell he wants to do, even if people die. He still has the right to do it, and it has to do with, white supremacist arrogance that they are entitled to do whatever they feel like doing with anything that's on this earth.
Thank you for calling in and contributing today. You know, it reminds me of reading my old notes from years ago, a program I did. On Thomas Jefferson, and there was a biography written, and it explained this. They call it a mysterious young woman named Sally Hemings. She wasn't mysterious. There's no mystery to her. She was an enslaved child that Thomas Jefferson had six children by. But they kind of messed with people's minds as if to say, well, you know, he was looking out for her. No such thing. He was a rapist. He was a child rapist. And that's how history should record it. Just like what's going on now, and I take Tony's point on that. is not a major legislative conundrum, a big problem that suddenly has arisen and they're wrestling with it. No, not at all. This is the same incompetent, crazy head of state you put in. You put him there. And now that he is doing what comes naturally to him, and you gave him the power to be able to translate his will into reality. Whatever he wills, he can get it done. Why is there this, oh my God, look what is happening now. That's who you wanted. That's who you elected. That's your leader. So fix it. I'm not concerned about whether it works out or it doesn't work out. I'm not concerned about that. Like I said, I warned people. I did programs on this starting 4 years ago, saying exactly what was going to happen, who he was, why it is important to really understand what it is you're doing with your so-called vote. Now you see. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Thank you, Ms. Lead. Excellent points you're making, and I've been straining at the bit for the last couple of days to speak to you about this subject you've brought up of race, class, and power. These are the three factors that the left has, well, however we categorize ourselves, I think we can at least admit we're all anti-fascist. These are the three factors that we have failed to understand and utilize correctly in order to advance our own ends. Your first caller made a point that I'd just like to clarify a little. In any relationship is a power relationship. If you meet a person or you have a pet, there's a power relationship at work. Now, if you are sane, you want to try and redress the imbalance so that the power differential is minimized as much as possible. That's what sane, human, cooperative human beings do. If you're a fascist, you want to increase the power differential. You want the power for yourself so you can lord it over other people. And this is our failure to understand this. Is why working class people have been manipulated everywhere since the 14th century. So every time we organize around one thing, gender, race, class, if we don't address the other things as well, then they will simply use those two other things to separate us. And so the power issue is never addressed. And our problem, and I'll get to how quickly, very quickly, how I think it will play out. But what happens is we end up compartmentalizing ourselves and our thoughts. The reason the right is successful is not because of the efficacy of the content of their thought. It's nonsense. Nazism and fascism are nonsense. But they involve all three of the issues. They are united and integrated on all three of the issues you brought up. They understand power, they have a stance on class, and they have a stance on race, and they have a stance on gender, all of it. That's why fascism has all the energy and we don't. We are compartmentalized, stewing in our separate little categories instead of having an overarching view that will actually give us power. So how will it play out? As long as people of conscience, anti-fascist people like I think we fancy ourselves, refuse to integrate all these things together, we'll continue to be picking up our limbs after every explosion that the right puts on us. So, I mean, Biden is just your new enemy. That's all. It just means he's going to give you more polite rhetoric while he does the same thing the right does to you. So the question is still always, what are we going to do about it? Because mm-hmm. there is no political answer.
Well, this is why I look with a certain amount of bemusement at the effort afoot now in Congress to take action against Trump via some kind of congressional punishment. It doesn't change anything.
It's the shabbiest empty symbolism possible. Yeah.
Well, it's what they're offering as a legitimate and effective solution. That's what they're offering. And that's what we are supposed to say, well, thank the Lord. Let's hope it works.
Yeah, I mean, it's like after the house burns down, you say, gee, I'd better take those 100-gallon barrels of gasoline out of my basement. it doesn't make sense. It's just shabby symbolism. It's an empty gesture. And the left,
people. We have to be very clear about that, because they are situating it already as if they are fighting. They are fighting. And they're looking for solutions. They have solutions. No. You had to start this fight, if you were serious about it, from the word go. They never did. They let him just do whatever he wanted to do. And now that he has said, thanks a lot. I forgot you gave me all this power, and I'll take it. Thank you. Now they're saying, oh, my God, this can't be. We have to do something. And they return to a nonsensical solution. This is not a solution. It is not. Thanks, Marcus, for calling in and contributing today. Thank you. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Keith. How you doing?
Good afternoon to you.
Yeah. I have a different look at this. I mean, as far as the orange man and him being the 10 senators and the system. I bring it back time and time again. We've had instances of uprisings in this country's history, and not in the central government, but in local governments. We got Wilmington, South Carolina, back in the Reconstruction days. You've got the other things as far as race, white supremacy issues. The bottom line is the system is corrupt, and Trump is just a symptom of this corrupt system. These people are now talking about impeachment, Article 25, all this and that. This is just a dog and pony show to take your mind off of the fact that these people were corrupt, and they fed this man, and they allowed this situation to manifest. And I think it got out of their control, because I full and well know that Washington can be locked down. I've been involved in situations like that. Washington can be locked down in any event of a catastrophe. And they knew this was coming. So all of this is political theater for our benefits to distract us from what we really need to be doing, which is a bipartisan cooperative movement to crush this government and move forward as a people to get some real change. Because even the squad, Andrea Ocasio-Cortez, Nancy Pelosi, they're all of the same ilk, and they all contributed to this demise in one way or another, from Mitch McConnell on down. And now, when they're caught with their pants down, they tried to sell you alternate history. They've been doing this since the days of Reagan. And as long as we allow them this pause, they're going to continue to do it.
What do you see, therefore, as the work that needs to be done?
The work is going to be local. I mean, you can take a look at the Tea Party, how that back in the 80s and the 90s, how they manifested. We're going to have to take interest in our local government and change that. And then work as far as we only have this system. As imperfect and as broken as it is, we only have this system. Nobody's really ready for real socialism, even though most of our government is socialist. From the fire department, police department, Internal Revenue Service, all of these things are government attributes to improve society in one way, shape, or form. And once we understand what true socialism is and how to work within it, then we can work together. But we got to work on what we got. Take over your local government. Find out how to get on the city council. Find out how the budgets are decided. Find out how the money goes. Enforce there. And then we can build a consensus to overthrow the prevailing system. That's the only way Canada got the free health care. It started in the provinces, and it worked its way across Canada until it became the prevailing force of the people. You got to get politically mature. Americans are not politically mature. That's why these jerk-offs could go to Washington and run around and be pawns in the game. You got to get politically mature. You got to organize and pay attention to what's going on. And it's a process. Everything is a process. Life is a process. You know, you're born, you live, you die. It's a process. What are you doing in that moment to better yourself and to better the situations around you? And that's it.
Where, in your view, I agree with your analysis, where is perhaps the most logical place to start?
Local government. Right on your block.
Yeah, you know, but where?
Right. Where? Well, that's where we started. Government. I mean, it's not that deep. Community. You had a block of...
No, give an example as to where a group or group of people wanting to create change tomorrow. Give an example as to where they could start and be effective from day one.
Well, that's it. Right on your own block. Get to know your neighbors. Get to know who's next door to you. Find out what they think is important in the neighborhood. Like I said, I'll bring it back to what you've been saying for years. Get a broom. We did that on 93rd Street. Now we got two garbage cans out there. The city put them out. They planted some trees. The neighborhood is, that part of the neighborhood is cleaner. People don't hang out there. You don't find the bottles. You don't find the paraphernalia that used to be there. Since I've been living there for the past 10 or 15 years, the past 4 or 5 years, it's been clean. The garbage cans are chained to the poles. They're little things, but those little things give you the incentive to keep on moving forward. Because if the system is controlled by the elites, this country is only a country because a bunch of people who didn't have anything going on in Europe came over here to make their fortune. There wasn't the elite that came from Europe. They wasn't on top of the pile. They were people who had nothing going on in Europe, and they came over here to the New World to make their fortunes. And once they made their fortune, they want to keep their fortunes to themselves. You got to work in your area. You got to do the next right thing that's in front of you. You know, it's not a cliche. And sometimes it's all you can do. But if you keep that momentum going, that block association could turn to something else. But everything is not going to be in your vision. What you do is for the future. What you do is for what will be. Everything ain't going to be in my vision because I ain't going to be a forever. But what I did on 93rd Avenue in Queens, that's going to be there.
Thank you. Thanks so much for contributing today. And that was the point I was trying to make, and you made it today. This is not new. This so-called crisis that we are suffering is not new. And certainly, it is not an unknown phenomenon. It's been going on for years. Congress is in the process of exempting itself from blame and taking on, you know, what we know. This is not the remedy that is required to make things better. This is not going to yield the results that are needed. It will just simply produce evidence of a record that, yes, the members of Congress did stand up and fight. I mean, really. This is when you realize how tough it is, how serious the matter has become, because you gave him free rein. Because it was easier for you to just sit in the background and do your own thing instead of really championing the rights of people to benefit from this thing called the political process. You asked them to come out to vote. Okay, they came out and voted. You pretty much indicated that you wouldn't mind if Donald Trump is president, and they took your hint and they voted him president. You saw on a consistent basis for at least 4 years. There are many of us who know him long before that. And we warned people. It was not a good choice. But you did nothing. And now that such a grave thing has occurred, you want to produce a record that you stood up. Well, you stood up at the wrong time and for the wrong reason. You still don't understand what you are fighting against. You still think it's one guy named Donald Trump. You still think that, and you still want people to believe that. Well, I say, folks, how did Ed put it? You need to have a little bit of political maturity. You need to grow up politically and understand that situations like the one we're in now should force us to look at precedents, and you'll find it. There's very little that happens in today's world that doesn't have political precedents. Just go look at the record. I thank you very much for contributing today, as you did yesterday. And we continue to talk. That's what our job is, to encourage people to talk things through and learn from each other, because there's much learning that we've done in just 2 days. Thanks for listening, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.